Well, happy holiday weekend here in the U.S. to everybody in Turdville. Hey, it's kind of a Turdville tradition when we have one of these three-day weekends to bring in the most oft-requested interview guests. And so we're going to do it again today. Here we are on the verge of what appears to be some increased hostilities, if you will, in the Middle East. A lot of mainstream news coverage that is telling you what they want you to think about why there's about to be another war opened up and U.S. involvement. But, you know, that's not necessarily the case. And so I thought, gosh, here it is, three-day weekend. What a perfect time to once again bring in the golden jackass himself, Jim Willey. And to what will certainly not be a surprise, Jim has his own ideas as to why this is all getting ready to take place. So, Mr. Jackass, welcome back to Turdville. How are you?
I'm doing strange, thanks.
All right, my friend. Everybody knows what I think. We all want to hear what you think. So the three-day weekend is about to start. Who knows what the world's going to look like by Tuesday when everything is up and running again. But tell everybody listening what you think is going on and how this all might play out.
Well, you know, I followed the news for weeks, and I read some of the reports, and many of them actually make me laugh a little bit because they're just so off the mark. Syria is about the last gasp for the petrodollar. It's the last defense of the U.S. dollar. It's about the emergence of energy pipeline geopolitics. It's about the rise of the natural gas co-op, which is going to eclipse OPEC. It's about the new dominance of Russian Gazprom. It's about the fall of the House of Saud, the Saudi Arabian regime. It took some time for me to realize it, but the Cyprus bank incident was a misdirected attack against Gazprom. It failed. They just don't want the Russians to make great new progress using their energy pipelines. And it's already done. It's fait accompli. The entire Arab Spring movement, an ambitious disruptive project waged by the Obama groups, it turned against its master. The Saudi princes have a similar hobby in to conduct assassination projects in Syria. They have a morgue to show the fruit of their efforts. But Egypt fell, the U.S. puppet's gone. The entire North African region will be in flames soon. And here's something that's just not in the news, and I came to learn only a couple weeks ago from my excellent source, The Voice, who has a lot of European industrial contacts. The U.S. government interfered with a grand industrialization project for European industry. It was to be placed on North African shores, take advantage of cheap labor, available minerals, nearby resources, easy shipping. The resentment by Europe will show up in the future. Mm-hmm. The Middle East and the Persian Gulf regions are shifting. They're starting now to salute Russia and China. We've got other problems in the Persian Gulf that are not new. It's the rise of the Shiites against the various emirates, the kings, the princes. Saudi is clamping down now. They got something like 30, 40,000 people in prison who just, you know, spoke out against Islam or the princes or something they didn't like. This is chaos that's happening. We must understand what's going on with Syria in terms of pipeline politics, OPEC, the petrodollar, and the end of the U.S. dollar. That's my conclusion.
And I think that ties in pretty neatly with a lot of the stuff I've been talking about for the last couple of weeks here at TFMR. So please feel free to wrap those together because I think you're absolutely right. Let's talk a little bit about this natural gas co-op that you've mentioned and how Gazprom fits into this. Of course, Russia, a close ally of Syria. And how this impacts the Saudis, because it seems to be, and then ultimately the petrodollar, that seems to be what this is all about.
Yeah, I call it the rise of pipeline politics. I learned a few years ago, just looking at maps, my gosh, look at all the pipelines going from Russia to Western Europe, to Germany, to liquefied natural gas facilities in the Northern Sea, the North Sea, and you know, northern ports in Germany. Look at all these pipelines that are being planned to go into China. Look at all these pipelines that go into the former Soviet republics. Look at all these pipelines that are under dispute, like Georgia. No one seems to realize that Turkmenistan is the second biggest gas producer in the world. But with Syria, I started studying what's connecting there. Well, there's a pipeline that starts in Iran, and I'm not certain, but I think it's going to pass through northeast part of Iraq, you know, the Kurdistan area, maybe a little bit. I'm not exactly sure of its pathway, but it's going to end up in Syria. And I started playfully calling it the Shiite gas pipeline, because everybody who seemed to have an important stake in it was of the Shiite sect. And then I came to learn, well, gee, Qatar has a major Persian Gulf discovery of natural gas, a joint discovery with Iran. Talk about strange bedfellows.
Yeah.
So Qatar, although they've got a participation against Assad working with the U.S., they've got a participation to feed the gas pipeline with Iran as a partner. So Qatar must feel a little bit awkward during all this.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the winner? Who stands to gain from the completion of the pipeline? And the answer is simple. It's Russia. Russia and their Gazprom pipeline system were the recent beneficiaries of an Israeli contract. Now, few in the U.S. seem to understand that the U.S., that Israel has a floating platform that is going to be significant in its production of natural gas. It's called Tamar floating platform. Well, in May or so, they signed a big contract with Russian Gazprom. All the surplus that the Israeli economy does not require from that gas output, all the surplus will go to Gazprom and their pipeline system that feeds the European market. You know, take a close look at Gazprom and their contracts and their pipeline supply, and you'll see that they've got a significant presence in Western Europe that some might say is a chokehold.
Right.
Then take a look at the Gazprom contract that was just signed with Great Britain. And you see, oh, gee, it looks like the winter homes are going to be heated in Britain by Russian gas. So, was a phone call made yesterday morning to the British parliamentary leaders having to do with gas supply that motivated the parliament not to back the war in Syria?
Sounds plausible.
Okay, it's not in the news. It has to do with what I call pipeline politics. So for 15 or 20 years, Russia has been building these crude oil and natural gas pipelines from Mother Russia to Europe, China, former Soviet republics. They've got some very big contracts. I think we discussed it one of the last 2 months that we were on. Contracts with China, where China is going to be paying for the gas with U.S. Treasury bonds. So it's all part of the indirect exchange. Payments for pipeline energy are going to be done in U.S. currency that goes back to the sender, and it's going to create a gigantic problem for the U.S. Treasury. They're going to have to redeem them all. But the U.S. news cannot accurately discuss what's going on with Syria. They can always talk about the hot buttons like Hezbollah and creating the Arab Spring and the support with Muslim Brotherhood and the longstanding animosity between Syria and Israel, but they're going to stand away from the assassinations that are a main Saudi project regarding, for instance, the brother-in-law of the Assad leader. And they, you know, they touch on the naval port that Russia has with Tartus. Mm-hmm. That's important. But I think the Gazprom pipeline is more important, because what happens is Western Europe will turn away from the U.S. leadership and beacon of freedom. How's that beacon of freedom looking in the last 10 years since 9/11? Now, we can blame foreign entities, but we have to take a closer look at the dollar, bank hegemony, the treasury bonds, and the toxic paper in banking systems. We have to look at the quantitative easing by the Federal Reserve and undermining foreign economies, raising their cost of food, which was the main reason for the Egyptian ousting of Morsi, the puppet. So we got all these pipeline politics coming on. There's something that's happening, though, that's remarkable and extremely significant, and that has to do with the rise of what I'm calling, for lack of a better name, the natural gas co-op. Mm-hmm. And it is looking really powerful because Gazprom runs it. So Gazprom and Russia are to the Nat Gas Co-op what the Saudis are to crude oil and OPEC.
Okay.
Take a closer look at OPEC and Saudi reserves, and you'll see that the reserves are declining rapidly. They're having a tremendous amount of problems in maintaining output. They got declining output. They have lies, bold lies about their reserve output capacity. Oh, don't worry, the Saudis can make up for that. No, they can't. No, they can't. They haven't for 10 years. What they do is they lie about it as part of the energy geopolitics. So as the Nat Gas Co-op comes forward, it's going to eclipse OPEC. OPEC is going to become a big gaggle of loudmouth idiots who have all depleting reserves and have great support for the U.S. dollar, but not much muscle behind it. So coming online is the Nat Gas Co-op, and let me just describe its strange bedfellows. You got Russia, you got Turkmenistan. That's kind of their core. Iran is part of this now because their pipelines, it's not just the Shiite pipeline going from Iran to Syria. They've got the Iran-Pakistan pipeline, which the U.S. tried to interfere with, but China stepped forward and said, no, no, we'll help fund its completion. And by the way, we want an extension over to Western China border with Pakistan. All right, so Iran is part of this strange bedfellows of the Nat Gas Co-op, but so is Qatar. Qatar is the biggest gas producer in the Persian Gulf and the leading technology contributor in LNG, liquefied.
Right.
But now Israel is in that. So Israel and Qatar are joined with Iran and Russia. I mean, this is wilder. It's wilder than OPEC.
Yeah.
Way wilder. And it really sticks a dagger in the heart of the dollar. That's the point behind Syria. Complete the pipeline, complete the chokehold for gas supply to Western Europe and Britain from Russia, and the U.S. is going to lose Europe. So in a sense, it's not just a battle for the U.S. to stop what's going on in Syria for energy politics. It's to prevent Europe from turning its back on the U.S. It's just enormously significant what's going on.
Well, and so, Jim, let's, because I'm with you, I think this in the end is all about this petrodollar system. There are a lot of folks have heard that term and they think, oh, that's interesting. And the decline of the dollar, and they kind of associate the two and the U.S. debt and the dollar reserve currency and all that kind of stuff. Can you tie all that together for everybody and explain to them what the petrodollar system is and why that's the key to what is happening in Syria?
Okay. All right. I'll try to, but let me just make a couple preface points.
Okay.
That the attack on Cyprus was really an attack against Russia and Gazprom. One of the biggest banks in Cyprus is Gazprom Bank. Cyprus is the window for the entire Russian banking system to do commerce through banking with the entire West. So They attacked Cyprus, the confiscation, all these different things. Not a single Russian bank nor Gazprom bank had any confiscations.
Right.
And what's the news? Oh, bail-in model is put into place. Well, notice that there have been no bail-ins in all the Western banks since that model was put in place. So my theory is that it's a veiled insurance policy for the bankers to say, all right, you want to force accounting rules? You want to force criminal prosecution fraud rules on our big banks? No, we're protected. We're sacred. You leave us alone, because if you don't, we'll do a bail-in and take all the people's money, or take a lot of their money, or take 30% of their money. Mm-hmm. So they can't pull the switch, because it would mean everything goes dead. So it was an attack of Gazprom. It was to try to create a fire, to cut off this pipeline politics of power. All right. If you look at the U.S. policy regarding energy in the last several years, you see nothing but failures. Back in 07 and 08, there were undersea communication lines cut against Iran because they were starting to sell oil and gas in non-dollar denomination.
Yeah.
Then you have the Iran sanctions,
right,
which were put into place because Iran was there. Okay, they might have some nuclear facilities, but they got no missiles, no delivery, and they got no great refinement systems. Oh my gosh, every single year, 07, 08, 09, 10, 11, 12, it's the same knucklehead BS story about a nuclear threat against whoever. Oh gosh, they could have missiles that could reach Britain. They don't even have missiles. So it was about dollar-based abandonment for energy sales. They were accepting other things. Now India and Turkey are allies to Iran in non-dollar settlement. So what does the U.S. do? We force a 20% decline in the Indian rupee.
Yeah.
So they get price inflation in India as punishment. This is our politics. This is a U.S. government politics over energy. So the Iran-Pakistan pipeline, that was another failure. China stepped forward to say, fine. Then you could link Libyan energy and finance and their dinar plans and bring that into the mix. So the U.S. went in there, had a war, and heck, they just stole Gaddafi's 144 tons of gold. He's not around to claim his gold anymore because he's disemboweled sitting in a culvert.
Right.
Okay, then that backfired with the Libyan embassy controversy. And then we follow all this up with QE bond purchase programs that are lifting the price of everything, including food. And what cultures, what nations are the worst affected? Most affected by price inflation and food, and it's the Arab world that spends between 70 and 85% of their income on food, unlike the Americans, which is about 15%. All right, so all this is preliminary to you know, big nat gas co-op politics. It's going to have the nat gas co-op is going to have more partners. It's going to have other former Soviet republics. It's going to have other offshore, like Turkish offshore, like Indian offshore gas production. They're all going to go to Gazprom because they have the pipeline delivery system. It's a strategic advantage. Now, all this points to the sunset, the demise, the end, the death of the petrodollar. All these countries are going to be taking payment for their gas supply, and eventually I think it's going to happen to OPEC. They're going to change their mind. These nat gas co-op nations are going to take payment outside the dollar. All these nat gas co-op entities, players, contributors, are going to join the Eurasian Trade Zone. They're going to join the BRICS nations. They're going to join the economy from the Eurasian Trade Zone, and they're going to join the financial system being set up by the G20 and the BRICS nations. It's
right.
Going to be gold-based trade settlement.
Exactly.
So Syria is about the project to stop this entire, I think, unstoppable chain. They cannot stop the unstoppable chain of the Natgas co-op, the rise of Russian Gazprom, and the institution of gold trade settlement. this timing, the timing is perfect to try to interfere with the early September G20 meeting in Moscow.
Yeah, how about that?
Has some satellite meetings in St. Petersburg, easier for the Europeans to go north to St. Pete than to go way, way east to Russia and Moscow. So we've got a lot of things coming down the pike, and some of the signals to watch for are more disruption to the Saudi regime, to chaos inside Saudi Arabia, to princes leaving the country with their wealth.
Yeah.
Talking about repression and murders in prison and people speaking out against Islam ending up in prison in Saudi prisons. The Saudis are instituting a fascist state right now. I've long thought that the U.S. and the British are the core for the fascist axis in the West, and now the Saudis are coming forward to be, you know, good, solid partners with the fascist axis of regimes. So watch for the Saudis for signals. Now, wouldn't it be interesting if in late September the Saudis try to curry favor with Russia? They're trying to curry favor with arms deals and all kinds of really weird stuff behind the curtains. But wouldn't it be interesting if the Saudis curry favor with the Russians and come out with a statement saying, you want to pay for crude oil outside the dollar? No problem. Bring your British pounds, your euros, your yen, or your Swiss francs. We don't care. They're all good. We're just trying to be good global players. That'll be a signal to Russia that they want to make peace and they want to join. Now, some people are wondering, you know, how is this going to happen with these obstacles in the way, with the United States trying to obstruct? Just remember the last five or six major projects to obstruct by the United States government and their policy. They all failed.
Right.
We're dealing with the U.S. government having, you know, a pair of twos at a poker table. They got a big military, but, you know, there's some problems in the White House because the Pentagon is not behind the White House in this war project. And, you know, you can look at all these different analyses in the press and on the news networks, and they talk about the superiority of American military, and hey, to be sure, there's a lot of superiority. But I just saw a report 2 days ago with some clown on. I think it was a former head of Homeland Security, you know, technical analyst. I can't think of his name, but he's on Bloomberg frequently. But the clown was talking about the superiority and accuracy of the cruise missile, Tomahawk cruise missile. Well, the Russians have something that's a generation ahead of that. It's mm-hmm. called the Sunburn.
Right.
The Sunburn was given a full demonstration in 1997 or 8, sometime around then, when the Russians had an air show. And they let it be known that the Sunburn was going to be demonstrated. And they did not block Western military entities, defense contractors, you know, military agencies, that sort of thing, from observing. And they walked away in awe of the Sunburn, which has a follow-on big brother called Onyx, O-N-Y-X. So Sunburn and Onyx are the reason why there's been no war in Iran waged by the U.S., the Brits, and their axis. Why have there been no war in Iran? Every year we get the same saber rattling. Every year you get the same moronic comments, including some from some friends of mine. And I say to them every single year, we had no war last year, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago. The same effing nonsense is coming out of your mouth, and you don't even know why. The reason is the Russian Sunburn missile, which has 10 times the accuracy and 3 to 4 times the distance capability. So I don't know that we're going to get a conflagration in Syria because the U.S. doesn't want to lose its Persian Gulf fleet
right.
and part of its Mediterranean fleet in the first 30 minutes.
Yeah, those things do like Mach 7 or something like that, don't they? I mean, they could
don't
take
see them coming. Yes,
they could take. And I read about earlier this week that they don't even need a payload at the tip of them. Just they're traveling so fast. If they just simply run into a ship, the kinetic energy will wipe it out. So, I guess as we wrap, Jim, it's going to be a. I think you're really close on the motives here. No question about it. And we've got this 3-day weekend. We've got the G20 coming up in 10 days, 11 days, whatever it is. Obama's supposed to be leaving town and heading over that way by late next week. We've got a new moon coming up beginning on the 5th, I believe. So it'll be completely dark. We've got Ramadan coming to an end, I believe. I mean, got all these different things. I mean, you want to stick your neck out? I mean, do you think this is going to happen, or is it all just a bunch of saber rattling, like you said, the way we've always done with Iran and others, and it'll go by the wayside, and we'll just see what happens?
Well, I've got a new moon for you too, but I'm sitting on it.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, here's my conclusion. As energy sales move gradually away from the dollar in trade settlement, the world is going to change. The banking systems will change. They will no longer be based in U.S. Treasury bonds. So there'll be a grand diversification away from the dollar, away from Treasury bonds. And as the global trade settlement comes for gold-based settlement, you're going to see the BRIC nations all diversify from Treasury bonds over to gold. Syria is the last line of defense for the U.S. dollar. And as for the G20, I think any U.S. delegates, including the chief from the White House, will be sitting in the corner watching the events take place with the real players, the G20 players.
Right.
Because the U.S. lacks industry, they lack a legitimate currency, they lack legitimate leadership, and it's basically a nation that relies heavily on war to supply itself, to the point that the war machine needs a new war to capture more energy supplies to keep the war machine moving, which is the cart before the horse. I don't have any direct forecasts on when and where and whether we're going to get a conflagration, but I just have a gut feeling that cooler heads will prevail, and the U.S. is really not hell-bent on either military suicide or banker suicide. So I don't think we're going to see much of anything happen, just like with Iran.
Yeah, and I think as you've indicated, they'll only this won't likely wouldn't go well and would only accelerate the demise of the petrodollar and the destruction of the dollar. And these guys aren't about to do, in the end, anything that's going to accelerate that process. They want to cling to their power as long as they can.
Well, there's a saying that if you're going to lose at the chess table, kick the table over.
Yeah, turn out the lights and kick the table over.
And I think that what we're seeing in one respect is the end of the dollar, the threat to the petrodollar, the eclipse of OPEC, the rise of Gazprom, and the emergence of the Nat Gas Co-op, it all means that the U.S. dollar is checkmated in four moves. So will they kick the table over and say we never lost, or will they say we lost, congratulations, and we will now walk into the night quietly? Not a chance in hell.
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, Jim, it's going to be an interesting weekend, that's for sure, and a very, very interesting end of 2013. These next 4 months that all begin Tuesday are going to be crazy. I hope we can speak again sometime soon, because I know everybody always looks forward to hearing from you.
I think we're going to see a lot of changes, Turd. I can't say how violent they're going to be. My hope is that instead of incendiaries and bombs dropping, instead it's financial platforms that collapse. It's economic systems that falter, and we see the emergence of gold trade settlement and a return to the gold standard through trade, not through banks, not through Forex. And the U.S. is going to be, I think, the last member of this wagon train. And as a result, the U.S. is going to fall into the deindustrialized third world. I've said that now for several years, and I stick with it. I said in 08 that the U.S. is going to have a debt default. I'll stick with it and just watch it all take place.
Certainly seems, I mean, everybody, we're in agreement there. I mean, it's an eventuality. It's just a matter of when at this point.
Yeah.
Okay. Jim, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure, and stay safe out there, my friend, and let's just see what happens these next few days.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much. Great to be on.
Thanks, Jim.